case number 3. Ken, after this case, I'd appreciate a break. Okay, 092590, Level versus the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Morning, Mr. Mag. Come on up.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Thomas Mag, and I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case. So that the panel is clear, there is only one count of the complaint that is subject to this appeal, and that is the dismissal of count 8 of the First Amendment complaint.
Do we have a final judgment? It seems many of the claims were dismissed without prejudice.
Count 8 was dismissed with prejudice.
So that's it. Then.
That is the only case, the count that was dismissed with prejudice, that is the only subject of this appeal.
Okay.
Quite simply, count 8 was dismissed on res judicata collateral estoppel grounds. The purported basis of the collateral estoppel res judicata ground was prior litigation involving Daniel Lavelle's wife with the Department of Natural Resources on prior administrative hearings. Daniel Lavelle, who was the permittee for the administrative hearing challenged in count 8, being administrative hearing AW08009, was never a party to any of the prior litigation.
Did you have notice that the district court was considering taking judicial notice of the appeals and the prior rulings back in 2001 and 2004?
I do not believe that prior to the court's initial order dismissing the First Amendment complaint that the district court advised the parties that it was considering taking judicial notice, and I don't recall.
I didn't see anything. I wasn't exactly sure how that came about in the district court with the first opinion.
Candidly, I'm not sure, which is part of the reason I'm here today. If I understood it and could follow it, I might not have filed a notice of appeal. But there was nothing that I'm aware of in the record where the district court advised the plaintiff that it was considering the exhibits attached to the 12B6 motion, which, of course, is supposed to only consider the four corners of the complaint.
Would you agree that if there is an adequate state law process to challenge the lack of notice for the 2008 proceedings, then there's no federal due process violation?
As a general proposition, that's probably true, but if there's an adequate procedure in place, the appropriate result should be for the district court to dismiss the count without prejudice as premature and to allow it to then be brought in the state court, which is not what happened here. Instead, the district court dismissed the count 8 with prejudice on collateral estoppel grounds because of an unrelated litigation between a different plaintiff and the DNR on different administrative hearings that candidly is still working its way through the state court system. I imagine, although it's not part of the record, that counsel is going to argue that there is a published decision affirming the state trial court decision. Again, it's not part of the record, but in anticipation of her argument, I would note that even the published appellate decision is not final. There's still 32 days to file a petition of leave to appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court.
You mean as of today?
As of today.
Oh, God.
So, in my experience, it's quite likely that the case will be over and done with before this panel can write its decision. But as of today, the state court appeals are still pending.
So, Mr. Mag, is that on the 08 notice, the opinion you just noted?
No, and that's part of my argument, is the administrative hearing AW08009 was never litigated in any case prior to the one we're arguing about here today.
Is there a pending state court case where you're challenging the adequacy of the notice from the 08 hearing?
No. This is the only case that the adequacy of 08-009 has ever been challenged.
So the opinion you just showed us, because I haven't seen that, that pertains to the 01 and the 04 rulings. Is that fair?
The 01 and the 02, yes.
Okay.
I mean, there's some case numbers that are 04 that were companion cases with that. But, yes, the prior.
So even if that is over.
It doesn't matter.
Because I thought you said that could be resolved before we issue
right.
the ruling here, and therefore this would be over,
now,
too.
A couple of days ago, I got a fax from counsel indicating she intended to rely on this unpublished, what was then an unpublished decision and is now a published decision, in anticipation of her argument. I'm merely raising the fact that even the opinion she's intending to cite is not a final decision. So even if it was the same case in controversy,
okay.
there's still no collateral estoppel under Illinois law.
So you're saying even for those prior proceedings in 01 and 02, that there still isn't a final judgment on those?
Correct.
All right.
But 08-009 was never litigated prior to
okay.
this case.
I understand what you're saying.
And Daniel Lavelle has never been a party to that litigation.
In 32 days, will the 2001 and 2002 for lack of a better word, issues be final?
If a petition for leave to appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court is not filed, yes. If a petition for leave to appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court is filed, as is my client's intention, no.
But your argument is that it doesn't matter whether that is or isn't because we're talking about different parties.
Talking about different
and
parties
different hearing.
And a different hearing. So that doesn't even matter. This court can render its decision reversing the district court, completely ignoring whether or not that case is still pending through the Illinois appellate system. Because candidly, it's irrelevant because different parties and a different administrative hearing.
Different parties.
Eva Levine Lavelle, in her individual capacity, was the plaintiff in the cases that are working their way through the Illinois appellate system. Eva Levine is only a representative capacity in this case as the administratrix of the estate of Daniel Lavelle, who was not a party to the prior litigation.
And your count 8 only pertains to Daniel's rights, correct?
Correct. Daniel and Eva were each licensees under the Illinois Oil and Gas Act, and they each had their own permits.
Mr. Magg, your reply doesn't seem to take issue with the appellee's due process argument. Do you dispute that state court procedures would provide adequate process?
I think they're supposed to. I'm not sure that in my client's family's experience that it has actually succeeded, but at least there is no systemic impediment that I have been able to identify, and the current law per the Illinois Appellate Court is that even right now Daniel Lavelle could file an appropriate action in
state court commits an error.
Yes.
That error can be appealed. If it's a federal question, you could take certiorari to the Supreme Court from state judgment, right?
Correct. But if there are adequate state court remedies, the appropriate remedy is not to dismiss the case with prejudice, but rather to simply dismiss the case without prejudice as being premature. And I've cited cases for that proposition in my brief.
So is that really what you're asking for? To dismiss, send it back, have it dismissed without prejudice so you can go to the state court?
My client would be satisfied with a dismissal without prejudice so that he can proceed in state court.
Okay. You're in your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Welsh.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Counsel. I'd first like to make this case easier for the Court. The collateral estoppel issue is not something that we're suggesting it should be a grounds for affirmance. In fact, in our response to the post-judgment motion, we agreed that collateral estoppel did not apply to count 8 because it was Daniel was the permittee, and it the prior cases did not concern the 2008 department decision.
So, in other words, you're agreeing that issue preclusion didn't apply here, at least to count 8.
Correct. Okay. We are. And that is, as counsel says, the only counted issue here. But that's not the problem here. The problem here is that the dismissal with prejudice should be affirmed on either of two grounds. One is that
Forgive me for one moment, because there is another problem, I fear. Did you argue for issue preclusion in your motion to dismiss in the district court?
We argued issue preclusion with regard, and there were two motions to dismiss. With regard to, in the first motion.
Let's talk about eight, count 8.
To dismiss. I don't believe that we did. I think, as I recall, we argued issue preclusion as to Stanley's counts, the other counts, not as to this particular count.
Well, if you didn't, then how could Lavelle have anticipated that the court would rule on that basis?
Your Honor, I don't know that it could have, but when I'm the problem here is that when the court denied the plaintiff's post-judgment motion, the Rule 59 motion, saying that you should have told me earlier that Daniel was the permittee for this oil well.
You know,
and that was
I'm sorry.
That was also the ground on which the count 8 was dismissed, because what the plaintiffs did in the response to the motion to dismiss with regard to count 8, they said, we're adopting Stanley's arguments with regard to his due process claims. And Stanley admitted that he was not the permittee in his opposition to the motion to dismiss. So the court drew the reasonable inference that Daniel was in the same position that Stanley was, that is to say that neither of them was the permittee. But in any event...
Didn't the plaintiff allege, though, in count 8 of the complaint that Daniel owned the wells?
Right, but owner isn't necessarily permittee. I mean, Stanley also said, I'm an owner, but I'm not the permittee. But then he admitted, I'm not the permittee.
Wouldn't that be a question of fact, then, not appropriate to resolve at the 12B6 stage?
Well, no, because at the 12B6, in his response to the 12B6, the Stanley said, I'm not the permittee, even though he had alleged an ownership interest. And Daniel said, whatever Stanley said, I'm saying too. He didn't say in his response to the motion to dismiss, no, I'm the permittee. So if that was a problem with regard to the plaintiff's response to the motion to dismiss. But in any event, the squarely this case should be affirmed because there is no due process claim.
Let me just ask this. Did Eva receive notice of the 2008 proceedings or not? The briefs aren't clear on whether she actually received notice. I know the department found that it had sent notice, but was that finding an error? Because you seem to concede on page 12 of your brief that neither Daniel nor Eva had noticed.
That's what the plaintiffs alleged. So for the purposes of 12B6, we have to accept that as true. It's not, I mean, it isn't true that that service, I mean, I know this, it's outside the record. It isn't true, which is why the department found that service had been affected. It isn't true that notice wasn't received, but we accept that as true for the purposes of the motion to dismiss, that it wasn't actually received. But again, the point of the due process claim, you can't succeed on a due process claim unless you can show that you didn't have notice and opportunity to be heard. And we know from the very fact that Eva herself filed collateral attacks on the same lack of notice problem, that those were available to her, that under Illinois law you may collaterally attack the department decision based on lack of notice from the very availability of the collateral attack under state law. We know that Illinois law provides the process that is due for a failure to serve claim.
Okay, if I can get a question.
Of course.
So we have a federal claim for a denial of procedural due process because of a random and unauthorized act on the part of a state actor. Okay, and your position is there is in place a viable state remedy. Am I correct?
Correct.
And your brother says, well, you got to give me a dismissal without prejudice. I presume you're going to want a dismissal with prejudice.
Correct.
Since you're arguing in favor of affirmance, can you tell us why it should be with prejudice as opposed to without prejudice?
Yes, I can. Because the plaintiff's cases have to do with conditions that must be satisfied prior to the filing of a lawsuit. For example, in the PLRA context, you have to have exhausted the grievance process before you can file a complaint for an Eighth Amendment violation. In addition, before you file a Title VII claim, you have to receive a right to sue letter. Those are the cases he's citing, that there's a condition precedent before you can go to court. That's not true here. Plaintiff could have gone to the state court just as, you know, Daniel could have gone to the state court just as Eva did. Daniel made a forum selection choice, so he came here. And the same, so he could either choose to go to the state court or choose to go to federal court with his federal due process claim. He chose to go to federal court. If he failed to state a cause of action because Illinois law has available to him a sufficient process, which is to say the collateral attacks that Eva herself brought to the prior department cases on the very same issue, because that process is available under state law, she failed to state a claim. And if you fail to state a claim, your claim is dismissed with prejudice. You cannot bring it again in state court. You can, but then there would be, you know, preclusion problems. So that is why, although the plaintiff says that dismissal without prejudice is the proper remedy here, or is the proper outcome here, in fact, dismissal without prejudice for failure to state a claim, and because there is no condition precedent to the filing of this suit, there's no exhaustion principle in due process claims, then the dismissal must be with prejudice. And I want to point out one other thing, is that it's a little unclear from count 8 whether the only defendant was the director or whether it was also the department. If it was the department, then the department has to, any claim against the department in count 8 would have to be dismissed with prejudice, of course, because the department is not a person for purposes of section 1983. And we know that issue should be dealt with first before any other issue should come up. You shouldn't have to worry about 11th Amendment or so on. That's the order in which these claims are granted. Now, even so, just to sort of sum up, even if the court decided that the Rule 59E denial was an abuse of discretion, and I think it's hard to do that because the claim, certainly with regard to Daniel's claim saying I'm not the permittee, is untimely because you had to be the permittee to have notice, to be entitled to notice. That was front and center in both our motions to dismiss. If you're not the permittee, then you're not entitled to notice. So for that reason, the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying the plaintiffs in Daniel's 59E motion, which I might point out we raised in our responsive brief, and the plaintiff made no reply to in his reply brief. But fundamentally, the real problem here is that the plaintiff failed to state a procedural due process claim. We know that process is available under Illinois law, both the collateral attack that Eva brought if it had been within 35 days of the decision by the department and a decision for administrative review under state law. So we know that there are several processes available. They could have brought mandamus saying, you know, you have to follow the Constitution. There are several processes available. The plaintiff didn't avail himself of them, and for that reason, dismissal with prejudice should be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Welch. Mr. Mag.
Very briefly, counsel has conceded that there is no collateral estoppel reason to dismiss count 8. With that in mind, this court should summarily reverse the district court. As to whether plaintiff has stated a cause of action, if the district court had have dismissed count 8 for failure to state a cause of action because there's no procedural due process, plaintiff could have filed a motion for leave to amend to plead something else. But we didn't even get there because the district court, obviously by the tenor of its order, wasn't inclined to consider much else after its dismissal order. The basis of its dismissal order, counsel has conceded.
Does that mean we don't try?
I don't understand, Your Honor.
Well, I mean, what kept you from asking for reconsideration on that issue?
Quite frankly, I felt I was risking contempt by filing the motion for reconsideration I did file, since the district judge wrote in his order that counsel is advised to let it go, save for review by the U.S. Court of Appeals. And I see that I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Was there something you absolutely needed to add?
I will stand on the briefs, and thank you.
Okay. Thanks to Mr. Mag and Ms. Welch, the case will be taken under advisement. We are going